I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. In Pennsylvania, two white Democrats running for state attorney general are battling over criminal justice issues affecting the African-American community. WHYY's Katie Culinary reports.
It all started when Allegheny County District Attorney Stephen Zappala's campaign ran this ad.
He didn't need a traffic stop in Texas, a shooting in South Carolina.
It features video of the state trooper pulling over Sandra Bland, a black woman who died later in police custody, and a clip of Walter Scott, an unarmed black man running away from the white officer who shot him in the back. The ad goes on to tout Zappala's conviction of a white officer in Pittsburgh who shot an unarmed black man in the 1990s. Last week, black clergy supporting Montgomery County Commissioner Josh Shapiro, the Democratic frontrunner in the attorney general's race, slammed Zappala for pandering to black voters and questioned his record on police-involved shootings. Marshall Mitchell is pastor of Salem Baptist Church in Jenkintown.
We are very sensitive about the images of black suffering. We're also very, very concerned about the cheapening of life in the African-American community.
At a press conference in Philadelphia, Zappala marshaled his supporters, including black religious leaders and State Senator Anthony Williams, to defend the ad and his record.
I don't want to see this campaign divided based on race, nor was it intended to create issues strictly along those lines.
Meanwhile, Zappala's campaign released a second ad, very similar to the first, eliminating images and references to the deaths of Bland and Scott. Shapiro is also hitting the airwaves with an ad featuring Philadelphia City Council President Darrell Clark, who says Shapiro will make reforms to deal with the state's overcrowded prisons, issues important to black voters. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Medicaid normally pays for doctors or hospital visits. But health advocates are gathering in Philadelphia this week to also consider using Pennsylvania's Medicaid dollars for housing. From WHYY's health desk, Tanya English reports.
Patrick Keenan from the Pennsylvania Health Access Network says spending federal health care dollars to prevent homelessness is a smart investment because it can lower health care costs. People with serious mental health conditions can face discrimination when they try to rent an apartment. Keenan says supportive housing assistance paves the way and can reassure landlords that prospective tenants have the outside support to be a good bet.
And the landlords know kind of where to turn when someone is having an issue.
In Philadelphia, the director of the Office of Supportive Housing, Liz Hirsch, says her city recognizes the link between health and home.
You know, where do you put your medication? You know, where do you sleep? You know, where do you go to your doctor's appointments from? There's just no way to be healthy if you don't have a place to live. It's really that simple.
Louisiana, Texas, and several other states now use part of their Medicaid budget to help people find housing and stay there. I'm Tanya English, WHYY News.
Spotlight tells the story of the Boston Globe team that exposed the Roman Catholic Church's cover-up of sexual abuse of children by priests. The film won this year's Academy Awards for Best Picture and Best Original Screenplay. An examination of how Hollywood is spotlighting social change will be taken up tomorrow afternoon by a panel at the University of Pennsylvania, moderated by Professor Marcy Hamilton, Cardoza Law School professor and author of God versus the Gavel, The Perils of Extreme Religious Liberty, and also of the book entitled Justice Denied, What America Must Do to Protect Its Children. Hamilton will first discuss the movie with Spotlight Oscar-winning producer and screenwriter Josh Singer, as well as actor Neil Huff. He played survivor Phil Saviano in the movie. Joining me now in conversation with a preview are Marcy Hamilton and Josh Singer. Professor Hamilton, Josh Singer, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Josh, let's start with you. Discuss the process by which you and co-writer Tom McCarthy put this story together. In some ways, it seems analogous to the investigative work that we see on the screen.
Well, we had a lot of good help, and it started with the four reporters and two editors who are the sort of heroes of our story, but found that we had to go back over and over again, in part because every time we talk to these guys, we get a little deeper in the story, but also we wanted to reach out beyond them, and we wound up talking to pretty much everyone you meet in the movie. You know, we really sort of ran the gamut in terms of, really talking to primary sources and going back to them again and again. And it really came down to Tom's desire to get it right. I think from the very beginning, Tom was very interested in authenticity, and it was something that, as a former law student, I love nothing more than to dive into research. So I was only too happy to go there with him.
I imagine in the early days when you were wondering about the film's ultimate viability, were those doubts based on the content or other aspects of filmmaking?
We always knew, the two producers who initially got the rights from the reporters, Nicole Rockland and Bly Faust, always had thought that this would be a reporter story, first and foremost. And I think that we knew from the very first time we sat down with Mike that there was a great reporter's yarn here, a great detective story. But that said, it is a story about clergy sex abuse, and that's a topic that some people would rather not talk about. And I think that's frankly one of the real issues and something we try to get at in the movie, that, there's a lot of deference and complicity that sort of helped create this scandal. Obviously, the Catholic Church is not a great actor, but it was all the people around them who I think were really enabled them to cover up.
Though, Professor, what the movie can't answer and doesn't, of course, is why we, as a public, look away when there are allegations of abuse, and whether it's the church or Kids for Cash or Bill Cosby or Penn State. Why does this happen? And I understand on the panel, among others, you're going to have an associate professor of clinical psychiatry who might have some psychological insights into human behavior.
Yes, Dr. Stephen Berkowitz is one of the leading child traumatologists in the country. And he has tremendous insights into, one, what keeps survivors from coming forward in the first place? And then, when they do come forward, how do they navigate the subsequent trauma of having to come forward? One of the saddest aspects of this entire situation, from my perspective, has been that the prosecutors and the bishops and the press at one point were all on the same page. So all a bishop needed to do was pick up the phone and call a prosecutor and say, I understand you've heard about my priest. I'm going to clean my own dirty laundry. I'll take care of it. And the prosecutor would say, good idea. It's the old boys network, and everybody is protecting each other's backs. And I've distilled it down to a very simplistic, but I think actually sadly true phrase, which is adults protect adults, and powerful adults really protect powerful adults. And until recently, until the Boston Globe, and until these, God bless them, these survivors started speaking up themselves, like Phil Saviano, and being very persistent. We just didn't know really what was going on underneath. Now we know, and the irony of all of this is, who is the most expert on sex abuse in institutions? And at this point, it looks like the bishops probably know more than anybody else, and they've tracked it more than anybody else. But sadly, they've also been the most efficient in stopping it.
Focusing again specifically on the topic title, How Hollywood is Spotlighting Social Change, what are other films that readily come to mind that are in the league of Spotlight?
Well, I think Spotlight in many ways stands by itself because it takes on a topic that I assume nobody really wanted to hear about. And the idea that you would spend your Saturday evening going to a theater to look at discussions of sex abuse is probably like, oh, wow, that's a great idea to fund. And it was gutsy for them to do this. This cast has really done a remarkable job of making it possible to talk about the unspeakable.
Professor Hamilton and Josh Singer, I'm sure you're anticipating a very lively panel discussion tomorrow at the University of Pennsylvania, How Hollywood is Spotlighting Social Change. Thanks to both of you for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Marcy Hamilton is Cardoza Law School professor. Josh Singer is Spotlight Oscar-winning producer and screenwriter. You can hear much more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Still ahead, Philly's great Richie Allen was a force on the field in the 1960s and a polarizing figure off of it.
He dressed differently, he spoke differently, and I think to some people that suggested a black militant.
Understanding the very complex Dick Allen as Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Fox's hip-hop drama Empire is watched by millions, but it really drew in one viewer.
And I watched the pilot, and as I was walking out of the room, I was all in. It was a spectacularly good pilot, and I called my agent and said, tell me what I need to do. I want to get this gig.
And now she runs it. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. How Empire convinced its showrunner to stay in the TV business. Next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace follows NewsWorks tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
Rutgers Camden supports WHYY and will host an open house for undergraduate programs 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Friday, April 1st. Rutgers Camden offers 34 majors, internships, and experiential learning programs, international studies, and opportunities to work closely with Rutgers faculty researchers. Details about Discover Rutgers Camden Day on April 1st are at camden.rutgers.edu or 856-225-6104.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Earlier this month, the Philadelphia Housing Authority demolished two half-century-old high-rises, part of the Norman Blumberg Apartments in North Philly. A string of low-rise buildings will soon follow suit, leaving just one piece of the vast complex standing, a 15-story-tall senior tower. As part of an ambitious transformation plan in the Sharswood section, the authority plans to modernize the property to the tune of $20 million. But as WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports, former residents may not be the ones moving in when it's done.
The 86 former residents of the tower are now scattered all across the city after PHA relocated them last year.
I'm way older than him. I call him my son, but he's my dog. He's all right.
That's Walt. You know, that's my dog. And he's good.
Walt Taylor and Lamont Greer are sitting around a table inside Taylor's new apartment at Wilson Park, a public housing complex sandwiched between a busy highway and commercial railroad tracks in South Philly. Greer lives just a couple floors away. And even though each is guaranteed a spot when Blumberg's senior tower is completed, neither of them is going anywhere. Greer says gun violence and drugs were routine in Sharswood, so much so that seniors walked around the Blumberg complex at 23rd and Jefferson instead of through it, even though it takes longer.
Then they in the middle of that place standing there, hey, we got this, we got that. And that's how it was.
For Taylor, it was good to get away. He grew up near the towers, then moved to Blumberg about a dozen years ago to make life easier after splitting up with his wife. He was already a security guard there.
To put me in a new neighborhood where I don't know nobody, I'm happy as I don't know what. Feels like, make me feel like I'm wide open, I'm free.
James Norcombe is also feeling more carefree these days. You can almost hear it in his voice as he gives me the tour of his new one-bedroom apartment, one of 29 at Queens Row, a tidy set of buildings PHA renovated in Germantown.
I have a big, large front room. And the front rooms combined with the kitchen area. I have a large closet space.
On the wall behind Norcombe are all the awards he's won during his two decades with the Mighty Glorifiers, a gospel a cappella group. Norcombe sings baritone and bass.
I'll see you all.
Norcombe moved to Blumberg after retiring from construction. He lived there for nearly 5 years, but never adjusted to high-rise life. He hasn't had that problem in Germantown.
I can come outside on my porch any hour of the day and just stand out on my porch and just lean over, hear the birds, catch the fresh air, you know. Feel like I'm a part of something instead of institutional-wise, like Bloomberg.
Norcombe says living in an apartment building that's integrated into the community gives him a greater sense of belonging than living in a high-rise that wasn't. He says sometimes people set you aside when they learn you're a PHA resident.
That's where all the crime is. That's where all the low-class people are. But it's classy people even in projects. It's according to the individual. It's your wall. It's not housing authority. It's your wall. How do you carry yourself? How do you live?
Norcombe has no plans on moving back to Sharswood, though he's happy others will benefit from PHA's plans. If the half-billion-dollar project is successful, it'll produce a mixed-income community with a revitalized commercial corridor, though PHA has been short on details about how it will pay for the entire project. For Sandra Preston, Norcombe's neighbor, reimagining Blumberg and the surrounding blocks is a good idea, And overall, she's happy the project meant she got to return to Germantown, the neighborhood she grew up in, where she used to trick-or-treat on Halloween.
They used to give us candy and money.
Still, the move was bittersweet. Preston says she misses the community within the senior tower, especially her neighbors on the 12th floor.
Everybody that was up there was cool. We didn't have no arguments, no loud mess, no nothing, and we kept the floor clean, so I loved it. It was all right with me. Yeah, 12th floor was popping.
Recently, two friends who moved with Preston from Blumberg to Germantown died, one day apart. She was devastated, in part because she couldn't easily grieve with her fellow senior tower residents.
Yeah, I do miss my booze. I do. I miss my divas and my booze. Because I have to travel now if I want to go see them. We have to travel. Some of these seniors can't get up and down on a bus.
Preston thinks some residents will move back, about a third if she had to guess. But she won't be one of them. To her, things will never be like they were. She's also not a big fan of elevators. The renovated senior tower will have new ones, as well as central air, new water lines, and a spruced-up facade. Each apartment is getting a new kitchen and bathroom. PHA expects the building to reopen by spring 2018. By then, PHA President Kelvin Jeremiah says Sharswood will be a completely different neighborhood, a much better place to live. And that, he suspects, will have more seniors weighing their options. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
There won't be
no. 5 years out from their last winning season, hope springs eternal for Phillies fans looking forward to opening day April 4th against the Reds in Cincinnati. World Series championships in 1980 and 2008 do little to diminish the pain of rooting for the team sporting the all-time number of losses in major league sports. Yes, there have been great players over the years for the Phillies, and we can argue their merits, but it's hard to argue that the best and most controversial player was one Richard Anthony Allen. Mitch Nathanson is a professor of law at Villanova University, and his new book is entitled God Almighty Himself, The Life and Legacy of Dick Allen. Mitch, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks for having me.
One of the tenets of his book is the divisiveness, the tension between Dick and the press.
Right. A lot of it goes back to he wanted to be treated on his terms, not on the media's terms. And the media had its way of handling players, white players and black players. He thought he was the star of the team. And as he saw it, the star of the team, whether it was the Phillies or the Yankees or the Red Sox, was treated with a certain level of deference. He didn't get that level of deference because there was this other double standard going on, which was a racial double standard, which at that time required black players to really keep quiet, and he really bristled against that. There were certain things that black players didn't talk about in the 60s, and one thing they did not talk about was the treatment they endured as they navigated the gauntlet of southern towns in the minor leagues as they made their way up to the majors.
And for Richie Allen, it was Little Rock, Arkansas.
Right, Little Rock, Arkansas in 1963. And certainly his treatment in Little Rock was no different than the way other black players were treated in other segregated southern towns.
But it was different than the way he was treated in tiny Wampum, Pennsylvania, even though that town was, what, 98% white?
It certainly wasn't a utopia, Wampum, but it certainly was more egalitarian than a lot of places. But when he got to Little Rock, it was a segregated southern town in the process of desegregating. If you're coming from Wampum, when you get to a place like Little Rock, all you see is regression. That's what he spoke up about, unlike a lot of other black players from that era who were pretty much inculcated to keep quiet about those things.
Though we can draw a line between Dick Allen and other luminaries of that period, be they Muhammad Ali, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jim Brown.
Right, right. Those players spoke out as well. They didn't play baseball, however. And baseball was always a conservative sport. And by the time we get to the 60s, as society starts to open up a little bit, baseball becomes even more conservative.
Arguably no more conservative than in Philadelphia and perhaps Boston.
Yes, the Phillies, owned by the Carpenters, very traditionalist. So if you're going to the Phillies, you're not going to an organization which is going to take a different approach to racial issues than how they were dealt with in the past.
Talk again about the sparring with the sports writers at that time Do you suppose if Dick Allen came up now, there'd still be that tension with the writing corps?
I think there'd always be a tension. I don't think it would be as contentious as it was, only because there was so much going on outside of the ballpark. And in terms of the civil rights movement, the Black Power movement, anti-Vietnam protests, free speech movement.
Though as we cited Muhammad Ali and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Dick Allen did not participate in those movements to nearly the same extent.
He didn't participate in them at all. But he looked the part to some people. He dressed differently. I was able to find an article from as early as 1964 talking about how he dressed differently. He spoke differently. And I think to some people that suggested a Black militant. So he looked radical, but I think he looked like young America looked in the early and mid-60s. It's just you didn't see that in baseball.
Mitch, thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much.
Mitch Nathanson, professor of law at Villanova University. His new book is entitled God Almighty Hisself, The Life and Legacy of Dick Allen. You can hear much more of our conversation at newsworks.org.
I still
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
The Greater Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce supports WHYY and congratulates this year's Talent Greater Philly Regional Challenge winners, Rowan University, AmeriHealth Caritas, Summer Search, and the District 1199C Training and Upgrading Fund for their commitment to educational advancement in our region. Talent Greater Philly works to amplify the region's efforts to increase post-secondary educational attainment. Learn more at talentgreaterphilly.org.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. The youngest winner ever of the Tchaikovsky competition, Akiko Suwanai, joins the Philadelphia Orchestra for Prokofiev's second violin concerto. Also, guest conductor Pablo Heras Casado leads Mendelssohn's Scottish Symphony. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or at philorc.org. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Akiko Suwanai in concert with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air, inviting you to join me when I interview Questlove of The Roots, the house band for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. The event is Sunday afternoon, April 24th, at the Harrison Auditorium in the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology. We'll record the interview for broadcast on Fresh Air. For more information on the event or to purchase your ticket, visit whyy.org/events.